2-minute meditation starts now. God. Each new day is a fresh beginning. Now are we the sons of God? And it doth not appear what we shall be. 1 John 3:2. While there is a place that dwells in eternal stillness and inaction in the innermost resources of our soul, there is also a place at the circumference of our being that, animated by the inner spirit, goes forth to accomplish. If we will take time daily to sense this presence, believe in it, and accept it, before long the life we have known until now will gradually disappear. Something new and wonderful will be born, a bigger, better, more perfect life. We will pass from sadness into happiness, from lack and want into greater freedom, and from fear into assurance. Through the continual emergence of the creative principle, any last finality proves to be but the beginning of a new creative series. This eternal spiral, finding its base in the everlasting reality, will never cease to emerge. Our increased awareness of spiritual truths will make each day a fresh beginning, a new approach to reality, a spiritual adventure arising fresh and new from the original creative principle active within us. I enjoy my present experiences and joyously anticipate each day's increasing good. Opening my heart and mind, I allow the creative action of God to express through me. Aware that as my capacity to accept good expands, I became a blessing both to myself and to the world in which I live. I rejoice at the greater possibilities of my future unfoldment. So, we talked about the ninth step. And we've got these neat little ninth step promises that a lot of people call AA's promises and all sorts of other things, but they're the ninth step promises. The reason why I know this is because they're contained before the tenth step, but after the ninth step is referenced in our big book. And they're read in so many meetings, but I think that people really just don't understand what they mean. They were confusing to me for a number of years until I figured out where they fell in the book. But I like to do this. I like to read them the way that I think they should have been written. So if we are painstaking about the phase of amends, we will be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. We are going to know a new freedom and new happiness as a result of making our amends. We will not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace as a result of making our amends. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see that our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear as a result of making our amends. We will lose self-interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows as a result of making our amends. Self-seeking will slip away, mostly because we're starting to engage people that we used to not engage. Our whole life and attitude, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us as a result of making our amends, because we faced all those people that we wronged and we paid back all the money that we owed them. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves as a result of making our amends, because in order for me not to get harmed in all those situations where I approached all those people, God had to do it. Are these extravagant promises? Hell no, they're not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, only as quickly or as slowly as you actually make your amends. They will always materialize if you make your amends. I can't tell you how many times I go through and I explain the ninth step promises that way to people. And they're like, oh, I never knew what those things meant. They just sounded all hokey and fun. And like, because like, what is halfway through? Halfway through the book? Halfway through the steps? Because they're the ninth step promises. If it was halfway through the steps, that would have come after six, but they're nine. I mean, I guess page 83 is kind of halfway to 164, so maybe halfway through reading the book, this stuff comes true. But I know all sorts of people that these promises never show up in their life, and they've read this book hundreds of times. But I've already explained to you the connection to amends and what shows up in your life, so maybe that's what they mean. They must, to me. And then it goes on to say, just to really hammer it home, this thought brings us to step 10. Well, what was the thought that brought us to step 10? Amends. See, this book always explains itself if you read it as a whole. If you isolate certain parts of it, sometimes it doesn't make sense. Step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and we continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past, which also sounds like making amends. Pretty clear, right? So in order for the 10th step to actively work properly, you need to actively be making your amends. And if you're not actively making your amends, maybe the 10th step works. I don't know. But the weird thing is that, like, I think you guys probably can sense by the fact that this is now the third time I'm talking about making this amends to my daughter, that, like, I'm not overjoyed at having to go clean up things. And because I'm not overjoyed at having to go clean up things, you know what I do? I don't wreck as much shit as I used to. So it's kind of this weird little motivation where when I actually get in the process of amends and I start to have to clean stuff up, I don't want to make any new messes. It helps me hold my tongue in certain situations that maybe I wouldn't. That self-righteous anger that, you know, some of us possess keeps it at bay. It allows me to kind of process this thing and realize the way that, you know, Brandon, you think you're pretty important. Sounds like you think you're pretty right in this situation. Why don't you get some more information before you start telling everybody else how wrong they are? And then I wait and I get a little bit more information. It's like, wow, I'm really glad I didn't make an ass out of myself in that situation, because I was certainly going to. Right? And then it goes on and gives us some instructions around the 10th step of what we need to do. I'm going to give you just some of the basic ones out of the book. I'm confident Tarek's going to take you down a path of some more deeper ways that he practices the 10th step, which are incredibly effective and wonderful. So, we have entered the world of the Spirit. I loved it. I love to pose this question. If you're seeing a therapist or you're going to a shrink or something like that, like, just ask them, how many sessions do I need to go to before I can enter the world of the Spirit? If they look at you a little crazy, maybe, you know, might want to send you someplace. But here it happens in the 10th step. So that means that if I'm actively working steps 1 through 9 and get to 10, I'm in a new plane. I'm in a new existence. I'm in a spiritual existence, walking amongst humans. It's fascinating to do. Recommend it. Our next function is grow an understanding of ineffectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. This idea that we do, that we can approach this as one day at a time. There's so many references in the book to forever and lifetime and forever. That, like, if I've got a leaking PVC pipe and it's got a pinhole leak in it, and I just need it to stop leaking today, I can wrap enough duct tape around that pinhole leak to get that pipe to stop leaking. But now, if I want that to stop leaking forever, it's going to take some extra effort. I'm going to have to go in, I'm going to shut the water off, have to cut the pipe in a couple places, get a couple unions, get another pipe, glue it all together, stick it all together, let it dry, turn the water back on. It can be fixed forever. More effort than grabbing some duct tape. Okay, so if you just want to stay sober today, requires much less energy than staying sober the rest of your life. If you want to stay sober the rest of your life, I recommend working all of the steps as outlined in this book and actually doing the 10th step. Okay, so the 10th step goes on to say we continue to watch. There's my first instruction. What am I watching for? Watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Well, how do I know what those look like? Well, if I've got a competent sponsor and I've worked these steps properly, I got this whole fourth step that talks about all these places where I'm selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful. And I've got certain patterns of behavior that show up in my life that I can easily now identify, because, like, when you write inventory, what you will find is that it's not just this thread shows up in one person. It's going to show up in 8 or 10. And then as you make your amends to those people, what happens is you start to get confirmation that clearly this is the way I walk around in the world. So when you work steps 4 through 9, it's real easy to see these things when they crop up. Then it goes on to say when these crop up. Notice it doesn't say if these crop up. So it's guaranteeing you they're going to. We ask. There's your second instruction. God at once to remove it. Then we discuss your third instruction. Discuss them with someone immediately. Probably a sponsor or somebody that's going to hold you accountable. Then the fourth instruction. Then we make amends. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. And then the fifth instruction, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So there's five instructions there in this step. The 10th step is the walking around step. It's what happens from the time I leave my house or my meditation chair, because I could actually harm people at the house, until I return to close my day out. That's the 10th step. The 11th step is what I do in the meditation chair, and it's what I do in the evenings. Okay? 10th step is just interacting with people. Once you, I'll pause and you jump in, and then I'll come back.
So the first 9 steps are the launching pad into the world of the Spirit. And so our actions through the first 9 steps will open up a door at the top of the stairs. But that door has a new language, and we call it the language of the heart. And that language of the heart is suffused through the 10th and the 11th step. You know, there is practicing the 10th step with all your amends finished that you're consciously aware of. And then there's trying to practice the 10th step with a bunch of unfinished amends. And I'm here to tell you there's a night and day difference between the two. Because I have approached everyone that I'm consciously aware of. I can walk down any street on this planet, and there isn't anyone I'm aware of that's going to be walking towards me on my side of the street that I'm going to dip out and go to the other side of the street because I don't want to make eye-to-eye contact with them. I don't know of anyone that fits that bill. And so because of that, I am free. So as my late grand sponsor used to say, how free do you want to be? That's what the 9 step's about. But it's directly connected to the 10th step. I would imagine that it is very difficult to practice the 10th step when you got a bunch of unfinished amends. At some point, you're going to be sitting in a meeting, and someone's going to tell a story about some unfinished amends you have, and boom, you're consumed with self. Like the alien in the movie Aliens that straps onto your face, this is you. And this is me. You know, it's all of us. That's what happens to us when we have a bunch of unfinished amends. We run into old, you know, extended family or friends we haven't seen in a while. But all the guilt and shame comes down like a ton of bricks. Instant disconnection. The only thing that's conscious to me is my overthinking of whatever situation is involved with that. And so if what Brandon says is true, the 10 steps to walking around step, it's much more than continuing to take personal inventory and promptly admitted when we were wrong. That's the short version of it. And it happened to me 2 weeks ago. I'm at a restaurant, run into a guy that I used to run around with in early recovery. And I hadn't seen him in a while. I really think this guy's great. And I like vomited on him. At this restaurant, we're like in passing, and I just dumped a bunch of stuff about what I was going through, and then I was like, hey, see you, man, great to see you, peace, I'm out. And then because of this practice of what we call reflection, the 10th step requires that you reflect on your interactions, you know. In my opinion, it does. Brandon discussed the watch, the ask, the turn. I think embedded in all of that is reflection. And so as I reflected over my interaction with this gentleman, I decided I needed to call and make an apology because I dumped all my stuff on him and didn't really ask what was going on in his life. And as the universe would have it, I do a big book study on Tuesday nights. And I pull up to the big book study, and guess who's there? Magic. And I get to do it in person. I thought that was really cool. I got I thought that was pretty cool. That's the short version of the 10th step. But there are 2 pages chocked full with spiritual practices. Let's talk about practice. And I'm going to read about practice. This is called Unexpectant. Meditate with no thought of gain. Pray with no thought of gain. Expect no ambitions to be fulfilled. Only then will the inner force manifest. In the competitive world, we give expression to our ambitions, shrewdness, and aggressiveness. We must do this to survive. In the meditative and prayerful world, we cannot use these attitudes. What works well on the outside will not serve us on the inside. When we meditate or pray, we must expect no gain. If we look for results, then those results will elude us. In contrast, if we suspend our ambitions, then the results will manifest very quickly. It may sound like absurd mysticism, but it is an undeniable empirical truth. If you have no expectations, you will feel the divine. If you strive and have selfish desires, then you will feel only frustration. When the mind is occupied with meditating and remembering God for gain, it creates a barrier to precisely the results that you want. Spirituality is a mode that is far beyond the machinations and imaginations of the rational mind. It is created by an aspect of the mind that is not a part of everyday thought. In fact, the part of the mind that brings spirituality is very nearly antithetical to the common ways that we think. Therefore, we can only reach this type of spirituality by suspending our everyday thinking. So, I think what my experience personally in my prayer life and meditation and watching the guys that I sponsor is that we struggle at times with the expectations that we put on the practices. And that's not the important thing. The practices are the important thing, not the results that the practices will generate, which there are tremendous. I'll give you guys a good example. So in the 10th step, in the beginning, it was a way to guard my inner space. So I became the watcher. And I was watching for the things that Brandon described: selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And I was learning how to have a dialogue with my higher power. I was learning how to think about other people when I was consumed with self. I was learning how to stop fighting, practice a position of neutrality, trust my intuition, or begin practicing it. These are the things embedded in the 10th step. And that served me very well for a very long time. Several years ago, my 10th step practice became singular. And it was remembering God as often as possible. You know, and granted, I have a spiritual mentor. He's a spiritual teacher outside of the steps. I've been working with him for 6 years. And as I worked with him, I remember one day reading the Spiritual Experience Appendix. And there's this little short paragraph on page 568. And it says, most of us believe that the essence, and this is such an important word, the essence of the spiritual experience is the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. That's it. And I translated that into, I need to think about God. I need to remember God as often as possible. And so, in order to do that, I connected my breathing to my remembrance of God. Because the Bible says that God breathed air into us. Said, be, and we became. That's in all the traditions, folks, not just in the Bible. That's in a lot of them. Existence in the Hindu is very similar, the creation. In Islam, it's the same story. Yeah. It's the same story. And so the breath is tremendous. And so my 10th step practice today is about witnessing as much as I can in my life, and trying to recall my breath as often as possible. It's the steps about staying awake and intent and being grounded. And it brings spirituality into the everyday life. You know, for years, I thought spirituality was when I was meditating for 30 minutes, and if I could get to that, if I could just do that for 30 minutes, get some body buzz going, get some trippy stuff going, and I'm thinking I'm being spiritual. And it puts spirituality on an other world plane, ethereal, ephemeral stuff that is hokey. Everyone goes through that phase. But I needed the way to bring spirituality into the washing the dishes and the pots and the pans, right? to where it was, somehow my consciousness was aware of the presence of God. And now it's like I have cultivated a practice of this idea that's it's an imaginative idea of being observed, of being observed. And that's part of my 10-step practice. You know, I have these malas, and I have another set of prayer beads, and a lot of times I'll take them and put them on my hand. This is a practice I'm sharing with you guys, and as I'm moving the beads, I'm remembering God with every bead I move. And I do this. This is why I wear these. It's another way of practicing the 10th step of like being here now. Right? It grounds you. It's amazing how when you incorporate this practice, like fears begin to fall off rather quickly. Overthinking and over-identification with specific situations in our lives will begin to fall off. And then I get to experience this place that I seldom experienced before I got introduced to any of this stuff, which is right now. The present moment. Very few of us visit that place. Right? Because we know our mind is in the regret caused by the past, in the anticipation of what's uncertain, because we want it to be certain. And so the 10th step has allowed me a way to just cultivate a deeper relationship with what I call God. Now, I'm not telling any of you guys that you have to do this. These aren't even practices that I typically share with most of my sponsees, because with the guys I sponsor, it's what was done with me in the very beginning, which, okay, for 1 week, you're going to work on this thing called watch. You're going to put all these note cards everywhere, on your dashboard, in your bathroom, on your refrigerator, and all I want you to do for a week is observe yourself. Watch. Then the second week, you're going to learn how to observe, and when the things crop up, immediately turn to your higher power and ask him to remove it, then turn your thoughts back to what you were doing. All right? So watch, ask. The third week would be watch, ask, turn. And then the fourth week, watch, ask, turn, cease fighting. All right? And then I teach them how to discuss with someone immediately, because that's an important part of the step as well. That's how we build our relationships. So all of that's embedded in the 10th step. I don't want to add much more on that unless you guys have any questions about the 10th step. But it's a practice. There's no arrival place. The idea that I'm going to get a specific result will not serve you in this.
What was that last one after walk, ask, turn?
Cease. Cease fighting.
I'm going to roll into 11, then you wrap up.
Okay. All right. So you can't really have much of a conversation about 10 without talking about 11, although there are separate steps. You know, Brandon mentioned that, you know, step 11's in the day and then step 10's throughout the course of the day, but step 10 has a component in it of ask. And so that suffuses 11 into 10. And I was having a conversation with a man I sponsored, and he was struggling. He was over-identified with his mind. He didn't think he was being effective in life. And he was explaining to me his prayer and meditation and how it had become stale. But he was doing it, and he didn't feel like he was growing and understanding and effectiveness, which is part of the 10th step. And I asked him a question. I was like, "Why do you pray and meditate?" And he said, he's been a good student, and so he knows the big book and he knows answers. And so he said to me, because I want to relax and take it easy, and I don't want to struggle, and I want to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and I want to be of maximum service to people. Like, he rattled off some combination of that. And I said, "Huh? So it has nothing to do with spending time with God?" And he got smacked in the face. Because I mentioned earlier today or last night about how fascinated I am that I've been as willing to do this work from day one to now. my willingness has not changed much. And I'm not responsible for that. And that fascinates me. So therefore, I have to be respectful or reverent towards this power which has given me this gift. So in order to do that, I ask myself two questions. And I've done it daily for I don't know when I started. I probably started doing this a year and a half ago. When I sit down for my morning practice, which it's a ritual. It's not like something that I get. It's not checklist for me. And I want it because there's excitement involved in it. And I'm going to try to describe to you why I think there's excitement in my 11-step practice. But as I sit down, so the first thing I do is I have a special place that I've created. Okay, I highly suggest you do this in your home. In my other home, I had an entire room devoted to it. Now I've got two spots in my new place. So I sit down, I've got my books, I've got my sage, I've got my little artifacts, and I pray. But before I pray, I ask myself two questions. And they're meant to be a reflection as I move into the prayer. Do I have knowledge right now of why I'm about to pray? And is my heart involved in what I'm about to do? Okay. And that, every time, that reflection removes me from the possibility of this being a checkmark exercise. Because it forces me to become sincere about what I'm about to do with the practices. And so then I pray. I mean, sometimes I pray for a minute. Other times it's like 7 or 8 minutes. And there are some mornings where I do a whole ritual with a prayer rug in front of my altar. And it's like a 15-minute deal. These are things that are important to me. The spiritual realm just excites me. So I'm not going to sit here and try to use it as a checklist. I've never been that way. Maybe in my first 15 months before I met Scott, I was like that. But after I met Scott, everything changed for me. The first thing he had me do was create a space. Okay. And so I pray, and then I've got 5 books right now that sit on my little space, and I read 2 pages out of each book, and I reflect, and I'm not reading for knowledge. I read to notice what occurs inside of me, what occurs in my consciousness as I'm reading this. I'm not trying to catalog something so I can go share about it at a meeting. I'm strictly reading for experience, not knowledge. And then after that, I do between a 15 to a 30-minute prayer, depending on where I am and, you know, if I got to leave the house. Never less than 15 minutes. Rarely. I don't want to say never. Rarely less than 15 minutes. All right. Meditation, the mind is like a bucket of dirty water. And so if you have a bucket of dirty water and you set it right there, it's going to take 7 to 8 minutes for all the soot and all the dirt in that bucket to settle to the very bottom. And then you're left with crystal clear water. The mind is very similar, but that time is different for everybody. I know some people that claim they can get there in 4 or 5 minutes. For me, it's somewhere between the 8 to 11 minute mark where the violence sort of begins to dissipate and I don't have as many thoughts rummaging through there. And I've learned, you know, that's what I've learned. I've learned how to just witness and not have judgment. Some mornings there's a tremendous amount of judgment because there's over-identification and overthinking, which creates friction, which is fine. That means there's a cleansing happening. And so the 11th step, I believe, is invalid if you don't have knowledge and your heart's not involved. That's just Tarek's opinion, okay? And so it's really important, I think, to know what we're doing here. And so I was talking to another sponsee about 2 weeks ago. We were talking about, no, it was longer than that. But we had a conversation last week. There was a couple conversations ago where he told me his prayer life was stale. The conversation we had, I was like, so you don't ever get excited to do your practices? And he said, no. He's like, it's just something I have to do. And for me, when I stumbled across someone who emphasized, be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer, When I began to study all the different traditions and read about them and go to Buddhist monasteries and go to the mosque and go to the Catholic monastery, I've been to all these places. I've prayed in all these places. I've meditated in all these places because I want to have some type of experience so I don't have a bunch of just opinions on things I've never experienced. That was one of my biggest character flaws. I wanted to give people opinions on things I didn't know jack shit about because I had no experience. I just had a bunch of preconceived ideas and shit that was handed down to me through well-meaning teachers and coaches and parents. And so as part of that curiosity, I began to read all these books and everything became alive and I got excited about it. And that's never left. That's what works for me because I know for me, I mean, I read 84 to 88 for 4 years, almost every day, and meditated, and I read some other books. And I can recite these pages to you. But now because I've done them for so long and done the things that they've asked you to do, I do what's on 86 to 88 for the 11th step. It's sort of become a working part of my mind. Because I've practiced it for so long. So I know, you know, somewhere in my prayers, I'm going to talk about my thinking and directing my thinking. You know, I'm going to ask for the pause when agitated or doubtful. The willingness to understand how important it is to relax and take it easy throughout the course of the day so I'm not over-identified. Those somehow work their way into my conversations in the morning. Or they're coming up in my consciousness because I read those pages for so long. All right. But it's been years since I've actually read 84 to 88 in the morning. But it's still happening for me because I've done it and practiced it for so long. So the goal here today is to emphasize the word practice. Practice, practice, practice. You know, this guy named Don Pritz was hanging out with a buddy of his, Mike. And Don posed the question to Mike that, do you think you'll ever be able to sponsor someone without using the big book? And Mike thought that it was a trick question or something. Like it would be heresy to try to sponsor someone through the steps without the book. And Don said, no. If you live the way of life described in the big book for long enough, you become the way of life described in the big book. So it becomes a part of you. So sharing the way you live, you're sharing the program that's in the big book. That to me was incredible when I heard it. And I've sponsored guys recently within the last 2 years and I didn't use the big book. They were already big book thumpers. What good was it? They came to me to have a new experience and I didn't use the book and they had a new experience. All right. That's more important to me, to revitalize and invigorate what we're doing here. That's what's possible in this step. You know, so I've got some questions that I typed out that I love, you know, and some statements. Prayer without the presence of the heart is invalid. Prayer without knowledge is invalid. Ask yourself, why are you praying? Investigate, why are you praying? What are you doing? How is this relevant? Are you present to what you're doing? And this is what floored me when I first was stumbled across this was, are you making yourself available to God? And are you cultivating the expectancy of God? Go into it knowing he or she is already there, always there. Spirituality is not something outside of life. It's embedded in our day-to-day life, and that's what I was talking about with the pots and the pans of doing the dishes. Can our awareness go to this loving, powerful hand of God that's present with us at all times? So the goal here is if we have fixed ideas, we relax them, we investigate, and then we move beyond it. That, to me, is exciting. But if I'm just going to latch on to the old, rigid, fixed ideas that I've used my entire life with the knowing that I've never been wrong about anything, right? Because that's what that's... Where's the excitement in that? You know, one of my favorite sayings is by a man named Thomas Merton. Those who say they know from the very beginning will come to know nothing at all. And that's what that's what fell off for me, this idea that I know. And I do. Sometimes I think I know a lot because I read a lot. And I spend a lot of time by myself, and I do a lot of spiritual exercises that are not talked about in a setting like this. But it keeps it fresh and exciting. I mean, Mark used to say that the juice of this program is in steps 10 and 11. And I do believe that today. You know, for me, it's the most important thing I've got going today. I love sponsoring guys, but my work with the 10th and 11th step is more important to me right now. It just is. For years, it was sponsorship. Right? I still do it. I still carry the message. I still sacrifice my personal time. But I'm more effective as a sponsor the deeper I go in steps 10 and 11. I've had several people walk up to me this weekend saying they're experiencing me as more gentle or different than they've ever experienced me, and they've seen me here before. That's because of my work with steps 10 and 11. That's not because of my work with sponsoring. That's what's going on here, is that you're seeing the results that I don't typically see. And you're sharing that with me, which is, you know, I greatly appreciate that. But there's so much here. These steps are like an abyss, Mark used to say. I mean, that's what floored me when I heard that message, was he did an hour and a half talk on one step.
Mm-hmm.
Step 10, he talked for an hour and a half on one step, and it blew the roof off my head. And it ignited a fire in me that has not burned out yet, to investigate and go deeper with this step. You know, he was talking about doing chanting circles and burning stuff in the backyard, and his neighbor was about to call the cops on him because he was in the middle of nowhere, Texas, when he was doing this. And I was like, this is exciting, right? This is so cool. I think that's all I got. I'd like to share this story about taking a leap of faith. So in the prayer, back in 2015, I asked my employer for a raise and they didn't give it to me, and I copped a resentment. And I started plans and designs about starting my own business. I always wanted a recovery center. And so I wrote a 48-page business plan, and I shopped it to a guy in Denver. Then I shopped it to a guy in Atlanta, and he said, "Okay, I'll give you $150,000." I was like, "This is wonderful." All right. So this is like in May or June of 2015. I asked for the raise in February, and so I began to check out of my job because I knew in December, right before the holidays, I was going to resign, and we were going to kick this off in 2016, and in August, September, my VP, my territory, knew something was up. And so he asked me what was going on. And I was fearful of telling him because I didn't want them to get rid of me, because I still had a big mortgage and I wasn't going to get any of that capital until January. And so eventually I was compelled and I shared with him what was going on, and he was very understanding. It was a wonderful conversation. And as I walked out of his office, he said to me, "Tarek, how much money is it going to take to keep you with us?" And I've got another resentment. I was like, I wouldn't even be sitting here. If you had given me the raise in February, I mean, everything would be great right now. And I ignored him. And then at the beginning of October, he was headed out for the executive management meeting up in Missouri. And it's a Friday. And he's going to be gone the whole next week. And he comes into my office on Friday and he says, "Hey, take this weekend to write your dream job description with this company in whatever dollar amount you want to make, whatever it is, write it on there." And so I went home and I wrote the job description. I wanted a base of $125,000 plus commission. I was like, I'm going to see what these guys are all about. And so he takes that up to Missouri where the CEO is. He comes back a week later and they gave it to me. More money than I've ever made. I've got a wife and a daughter at the time. a huge mortgage, and then I have to go into prayer and meditation. Because on one hand, my vision and my dream is to have this recovery center so I can show people what was shown to me with the 12 steps. And I started praying, and my prayers were along the lines of, God, please provide me some clarity about this decision. Give me some understanding of what I'm supposed to do here. And that went on for a while. Then one morning, the prayer changed. I said, God, please make it obvious to me of what I'm supposed to do here. And so literally, I mean, I wrapped up prayer and meditation. I go downstairs. My stepdaughter at the time, she was in that phase where she was leaving her little drawings all around the house. She was drawing all the time. And her and the woman I was married to, Marcy, had left to go to school. And she left one of her drawings on the coffee table. And I still have this drawing on my desk framed to this day. The drawing, it was a little box with these stars, and it said, follow your dream. And so I immediately called Marcy, and I was like, did you put her up to this? Because, you know what's going on. And she's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And so that afternoon, when I picked her up from school, I said to her, I asked her, I said, Callie, why did you draw this morning? She goes, I don't know, I was supposed to draw it. So I made my decision based on that drawing.
Yes. Yeah.
And I resigned my job and I started the recovery center. And I had it for 3 years. It was a great experience. It was exhausting. It was frustrating. I became very resentful at the drug treatment industry throughout the whole experience. I have nothing nice to say about the majority of the drug treatment industry. And I eventually started another business. But a lot of what I learned in that business is serving me well in this business. So I don't believe it was a mistake. But man, I took a leap of faith. You know, how do you trust? The hardest thing about trusting God is trusting God. And you're never going to learn how to trust God until you take leaps of faith. It starts with the amends process. Maybe it starts with the fifth step. So I felt moved. I had to share that story.
I think you need to add more to that story.
How so?
About when you started your current business and Randy came to you to approach you.
Oh.
And why Randy decided not to take the opportunity.
So the same guy who approached me came to me with a job offer. Was that 5 months ago? 4 months ago? And he wanted me to start a company with him that would be in direct competition with my old employer. Had anyone else come to me with that kind of job offer, I think I would have rejected it immediately. But because I care so much about this man, I decided to take it into consideration. And I did for a week. And I even did a whole pros and cons list. And I talked to my spiritual advisors about it. And I went back to him and declined the offer. And I gave him a description about how I had fashioned my life around my spiritual work. I have a very low stress job. You know, I have a job where my sponsees come to my work to do step work while I'm at work, because I'm the business owner. And when I don't have customers, I got downtime. And so sponsees come to do step work. And then we got guys that just come to the shop to sit on the couch and to get their free counseling. I guess we chop it up. You know, we just chop it up. We talk about what we're struggling with, and they spend a couple hours there, and they leave. It's incredible. It's just been awesome, and I'm doing it with my best friend, one of my best friends. So with all that being said, I explained to him, I'm not willing to disrupt my life, because if I take this, I'm back in the rat race. I'm back into that corporate environment that I'm not a big fan of. And I don't have that in me, right? And this is a guy who's extremely wealthy. He doesn't have to work anymore. So I'm like, I'm wondering to myself, when is enough for this guy? He can go travel the world and start a nonprofit and just help people. I have my own ideas around his identification with this business owner aspect of himself. And so fast forward, I go have lunch with him, and he decided – for several reasons, but one of the reasons he decided to stop is like the way I declined the offer made him reflect on why he was doing it. And so what he discovered were some of the same reasons for himself that I had declined the offer. You know, and this is all connected back to prayer and meditation, right? Because it had potential to be very profitable. But one of the things I've always been very grateful for is I've never placed value on money for whatever reason. Money has never been that important to me. What is important to me has been, since I got clean and sober, our relationships. You know, my last sponsor, I left him because I think I needed someone who valued relationships more so than other stuff, you know. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what my mind told me, so I had to get another sponsor. Is that enough?
I think that's enough.
Okay.
It was fascinating as an observer to the experience, because we're tent-stepping that experience. And when he tells me that the guy decided not to start the company in part because of, he was reflecting on the peace and serenity that Eric was displaying, and the guy wanted some of that. He wanted that in his life. So, like, when you start to remember the story of the prospector, right? Is when you start to demonstrate in your life this level of spiritual growth and awareness, the people around you start to be impacted and affected by that. You know, it's interesting. We usually chop up a bunch of the big book when it comes to the 10th and the 11th step, and it just doesn't seem like we're really doing that as much, and we're kind of more freestyling. So tomorrow morning, I was called to do this last night, and I pondered it for long enough to where I'm actually going to make a commitment. So tomorrow morning at 6:30 in the room called... What? That room. I'm going to do just my morning meditation and routine practices. Read out of a couple books. Maybe we'll do a guided meditation. Maybe we won't. I don't know. But so at 6:30, I'm going to be in that room. And I'm going to do that. Everybody's welcome. It's not as big of a room as this. I guess if it fills up, we'll have to come over here. But usually people don't like getting up that early. But please join me. We'll do some meditative practices before breakfast. Get done before breakfast and go from there. So that'll be at 6:30 in that room over there. New Diva?
New Devo.
Devo.
New Devotion.
New Devotion. I was like, what's that have to do with Diva?
Anyway. Let me say something.
Yeah, go.
So we did freelance, and we shared, you know, some current experience. The form that's outlined in the book is extremely important in the very beginning. And so when I start sponsoring someone, the first thing I do is start them on 86 to 88, but I don't do anything with 84 and 85, right? Because 84 and 85 are addressing someone who has some conscious contact, who's awake. You can't throw a new person into 84 and 85. It's not going to really make any sense to them. But just having a conversation with God upon awakening, and when we retire at night and all the instructions they have, that's great. But the reason we have form is so we can lose the form later. And so what Brandon and I have been doing for years is we practiced the form, and then the form fell off, and we are very fluid now in how we pray and meditate and what our practices are. All right, but the structure and the framework is vital in the very beginning. You have to have it. But it goes in line with this one sentence in the big book. It says, what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. The only way that things become a working part of the mind is if you practice. And what they've laid out for us is a great form to practice within. The form falls away, but you're still left with the practice. And that's what's really important. So we didn't go into dissecting all the different prayers and all the different instructions that they tell you for the beginning of the day, the middle of the day, the end of the day. These are all very important exercises. And they, you know, the evening review is nothing more but a reflection exercise. And it's I mean, these pages are, I mean, they're juicy. There's so much here that you can work with. You can chop it up and work with like one little section for a week and move on.
So this one, I switched the ones that I was going to read. Yeah. So this one's called Practice, since you were referring to it. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you have won. If you are lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those are things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to truly to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. The methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, if it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good enough. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? Be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer. So just the books that are floating around in my book bag here, I've got A Course in Miracles. It's got it's the text, it's workbooks, all sorts of other stuff. I've got a book that was written as a result of a woman doing the Course in Miracles. I've got a daily meditation, which I use on a daily basis, which is meditations for practicing the Course in Miracles. I've got a daily meditation that's written by a guy back in the early 1900s that's based on our thoughts and our mind creating our reality. I've got a book up here by a Hindu that's about your mind actually healing your body. I've got some poetry that's spiritual in nature. I've got a book written by a Lutheran priest who became a Zen Buddhist that talks about a lot of the Taoist practices. I've got a book written by the follower of a Hindu that is about Christ. I've got a book that was written in like 1908 about a man explaining how your mind actually creates the reality that you live in. And then I've got another book written in the early 1900s which dissects the Sermon on the Mount. And then I got the big book, and I got the 12 and 12. And this is a fraction of the books that I've got. I've got books that are started on my audio account that I haven't finished, that I'm actually in the process of listening to. One of them is the fourth book, Conversations with God. Another one, because for years I've been curious why there's this stigma around Scientology, is I actually got Dianetics by L. Ron Hubbard and started listening to it. And you know what I find is that people think these people are completely kooky and out there, but a lot of the basis of what they're talking about is in some of these other books and some of the other stuff that I've trained in. And so what has been brought to me is all these books have been brought into my life. All the ones at my house have been brought into my life by just a hunch or, oh, I need to listen to that. Or I need to read that. I need to experience that. And all of them, regardless of what it's about, gives me a different perspective and a deeper understanding of the thing, the power, the force that animates and propels every one of us. The source energy, the existence of us. And so I love this. One of my favorite questions to ask a group of people is, what if your thoughts were actually prayers? And then it's fun to just watch the people squirm. The first time I asked that question in this room, a guy actually responded with, well, those would be some pretty fucked up prayers. But what if your thoughts were actually prayers? And if your thoughts were actually prayers, would you ever endeavor to clean up your thoughts? Would you spend more time thinking positively about people? Would you spend more time praying for other people, even if you didn't really care for them? One of my first experiences with praying for somebody else was when I was praying for the mother of my children. I was praying for her that she get the things that I wanted in my life. I pray that she gets a relationship and that she's happy and that she finds herself and that she gets a connection with whatever she calls God. And I did that prayer for a number of years. I did it for her and I did it for my mother-in-law because to me they were the same kind of person. I would go to the gym every day and I'd get in the hot tub and I would do that prayer for 10 minutes for both of them while I was in the hot tub. Not much of an altar, but it worked. And what happened for me is that my ideas around her softened. And I remember she had dated a guy for almost a full year. And when she told me that they broke up, I felt so much compassion for her. And it was so strange because literally that entire year that she was dating that guy, I wanted her to get dumped by him and make her feel terrible and make her feel what it was like for her to dump me. And then it happened, and I was like, oh, shit. And I felt compassion for her. And she cried to me when telling me this because she had nobody else to cry to. And a level of compassion opened up for her. And I explained to you how the father of my stepchildren, how I've prayed for him, and something kind of very similar has happened to him. It's weird. I pray for people, they lose shit, and I feel compassion for them. So don't have me pray for you. But so what I've identified is that as I, through meditation, have more awareness, not necessarily control, but more awareness of thoughts, I'm a very logical thinker. My mind processes information in a logical, mathematical way. So information comes in, I process it, and I get an output. Not everybody works that way. Some people are visual. Some people are auditory. Some people have feelings about things. And so my thoughts come in from this side of my head. And what's interesting is that Tarek's talking. I'm completely aware of him. I'm aware of some other stuff going on out there, and I'm still reading a book looking for a quote that I was trying to find and completely engaged in all three aspects. And through meditation, I have the ability to sort thoughts, and I file them out here, and I can operate within different file folders because that's how they show up for me. Within different file folders while still engaging the people I'm in conversation with. It's like my mind has become almost computer mechanized in certain ways, but I believe that it comes directly from the practice of meditation and slowing the mind down and being able to focus my thoughts on things. Because guys, before I got sober, like, I was driving down the road, had the beer in my lap, had the radio turned up, the windows down, probably talking to somebody on the phone. Because the worst place for me to be was alone in my head. I drive 2,000 to 3,000 miles a week generally now. At least half of my time is in complete silence. Because it's the coolest place for me to be. You probably observed me as the room's filling up. Sometimes I got to go stand out there just for a minute or two because there's too much racket going on. And I got to refocus. I live out in the middle of nowhere. Maybe that doesn't sound very exciting because you guys live in the middle of nowhere. But like, as I drive into the city, I actually feel my energy kind of getting... because I have a certain peace where I'm at. I have a certain awareness of things as a result of the practices of the 11th step. Tarek and I operate in a completely different realm than the majority of the people on this planet do. We just do. We're not bragging. We're not saying that we're special. It's because that's what we've tried to do. I would say 90% of Tarek's and my conversations are talking about the weekend or what do you got going on or whatever. And then 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10, we'll bring up. So this came up in meditation this morning. Realized that if I die today, it doesn't matter.
I think that was last week.
Yeah. And I'm like, but it was like, it's like, it really doesn't matter. Nothing gets affected. And I'm not thinking I'm going to die today, but like, if I did, whatever. And then we talk about that. And the fact that there's a humble knowing that I'm really not important. But yet, if I did die that day, I wouldn't be here. And then you guys wouldn't get to experience whatever you're experiencing from me now. So I'm vital to your current existence. But if I wasn't here, somebody else would be and you'd be fine. Fascinating. We had it was probably going to be about a 5-minute conversation. I think we ended up talking for 30, 45 minutes until we ran out of words and then it was done. That's how it happened. So the exploration of, see, and I had all these things bookmarked and earmarked and things I was going to talk about and didn't talk about any of it because I wasn't supposed to. I have experienced, when the book talks about vision work and creating vision and setting ideals and intentions, our big book says that. The Bible talks about it. There's other books like The Secret and all these things that talk about how we actually have the ability to create a life exactly how we want. What I'm starting to deal with now in my life is I'm starting to come up against the limitations of my own thinking and having the clear negative thinking or limited thinking out of my mind to open up other possibilities. None of that is possible if I'm not actually doing a regular practice in the 11th step. There, I took on a commitment early in sobriety that I never wanted a guy that I sponsor to get to the limits of what I understand of God. And so from that commitment I made, I don't know if it was an actual commitment or if it was just a thought. From that day till now, it has been my goal to learn as much about this thing that we call God as I can so that there's not ever a guy that I sponsor that comes to me that I can't help him through something as it relates to God. In 8 years, I've not found anybody that's done that. I've got some guys that are pushing me further up the path because they're exploring and doing some crazy awesome stuff, which is forcing me to go faster and deeper and explore more. And as you do this, it accelerates and it goes exponentially. And as you help people and as they move along the path, it accelerates you. And as they improve, you improve. And that's pretty much I'm only like an hour into the fourth book of Conversations with God, but it basically says that the way for our race to excel is for us to do just that. It's talking about the 12th step. Is that if we can hook up with other people and teach them what we're learning, even though we don't know exactly what we know and they have no idea what they know, that practice will accelerate our race. And this book was written in 2016, and the awareness that the guy had is that 20 years prior to that, our race could not accept the book. But today it can. With social media and the things that are going on, our access to information is accelerating the spiritual growth of mankind. There's meditations all over the place that YouTube's got thousands and thousands of them. You can listen to these spiritual books when you're driving in the car, when you're mowing the lawn, when you're working out. I know there's plenty of people that when they're working out, they got all their pump-up music. I'm listening to Ralph Waldo Emerson. Because when I'm listening to that, I'm at peace and I'm able to actually do more with my workout. It's fascinating. Get in a relaxed state while you're working out, you can actually lift a lot more than you thought you could. Directly opposite of what I always thought was that I had to be pumped up to lift more. Relax, I lift more. It's fascinating. Spiritual realm is so fun to tinker with. I'm a tinker. I'm a thinker. I like to figure stuff out. I asked a guy a question earlier today. And he came and he was like, why'd you ask me that question? I'm like, I'm playing with a theory. I'm playing with a theory and I just wanted to know the answer to that question because it can either prove or disprove my theory. And so I start working with different spiritual concepts that come out of nowhere. And I start applying them, asking questions of other people and seeing if they become a spiritual truth, a universal truth for me. Because a universal truth, it applies to everything. There are certain truths that they're true in some ways, but not true in others. So it's not a universal truth. And I got a lot of people looking at me sideways, so I think I've maybe gone a little bit far out there, but it's fun. And if you want, we might do some more, or maybe not, at 6:30 tomorrow morning at the new Devo room. But I think now we're going to take a break, and then we're going to have this other Brandon speak. And it's good. We picked the right guy for Saturday night, because he's going to speak for like 3 hours, and he's got enough energy to speak for 3 hours, and he'll actually keep you guys energized in a way, because he's that awesome.